From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. This is what's happening. Well, North Korea pretending to be tough. Its army said it's ready to blow up South Korea and the United States hours after the Allies kicked off annual military drills that North Korea has slammed as a rehearsal for an attack. South Korea and the U.S., which normally dismiss such threats as rhetoric, began 11 days of drills across South Korea to rehearse how the U.S. would deploy in time of emergency on the Korean Peninsula. The U.S. and South Korea argue the drills, which include live firing by U.S. Marines, aerial attack drills, and urban warfare training, are purely defensive. North Korea claims they amount to attack preparations, and they've demanded that they be canceled. Charles R. Smith, one of America's leading experts on cyber technology and an expert on Asian affairs, with us now. Charles, more rhetoric by the North Koreans?
Oh, yes. If it wasn't for nuclear weapons, you could think of North Korea as a post-earthquake Haiti.
Yeah.
That's basically about it. This is the usual rhetoric running around. Kim Jong-il and clan need to keep the money flowing, and in order to do that, of course, you've got to get up, beat the drum every now and then, go back out, fake some cigarettes, print out some $100 bills from the United States, counterfeit, of course, and just keep right on rolling.
Why is it that they get to a point where they say, all right, we're going to negotiate. We want to end whatever war we had. We want to talk to you about our nukes. And then they go nuts again. What's up with them?
Well, you've got to remember a couple of things about this. It is a dynasty. Kim Jong-il is the second in line, so he's got to beat the drum in order to continue to maintain his power base. Once they make friendly noises and come forward, unless it's something where they can roll out the propaganda engine saying that they have a complete victory, forget it. It's just not enough. They've made claims, assorted claims, literally bordering on he's a deity, all the way to the other end that he's going to conquer the entire world.
Unbelievable. All right. Thanks, Charles. Charles' website, softwar.net, part of our Twitter feed, coasttocoastam.com. Now, here's where the United Nations truly needs to step in a big way. We see what's happening in Afghanistan and Iraq and other regions around this planet. But listen to this story. The UN chief and Washington here are leading calls for restraint after the slaughter of more than 500 Christians in Nigeria, as survivors told how the killers chopped down their victims. Funerals took place for victims of the three-hour horrible set of violence in three Christian villages blamed on members of the mainly Muslim Fulani ethnic group there. While the troops were deployed to the villages to prevent new attacks, security forces detained 95 suspects but faced bitter criticism over how the killers were able to go on a rampage at a time when a curfew was meant to be in force. Apparently, sometime Sunday night, for example, while these people slept in their huts, these crazed people with machete knives went running through the villages, slaughtering them all. Now that's where you need to send troops, to protect these people. Sad story tonight. Past Coast to Coast guest Jerry Smith, the author of HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, has died of pancreatic cancer. I had the tremendous time talking with Jerry back in 2008.
Chemtrails is a phrase I really hate to use, because chemtrails implies things about it that I don't think are true. Just like the phrase UFO. UFO means an unidentified flying object. But when most people say UFO, they don't mean that. They mean a nuts and bolts spacecraft from another planet, which is a completely different word.
Jerry would have been 59 in April, dead of pancreatic cancer. You know, for years, being able to carry a concealed handgun has been a sacred right for many gun enthusiasts. In defending it, the late Charlton Heston, the actor and former president of the National Rifle Association, used to say that the flock is safer when the wolves cannot tell the difference between the lions and the lambs. But a grassroots effort among some gun rights advocates is shifting attention now to a different goal, exercising the right to carry unconcealed weapons in the 38 or more states that have so-called open carry laws, allowing guns to be carried in public view with little or no restrictions. Now, the movement is not only raising some alarm among gun control proponents, but also exposing some rifts among gun rights activists. So Mark Stolenwerk is the co-founder of OpenCarry.org. He supports the right to do that. He's with us now. Mark, tell us, what's going on, Mike?
George, basically what you have is some folks who are sort of Johnny-come-latelys to the gun rights issue and haven't noticed that open carry has been around a long time. In fact, so long it's been here since the founders. It is the least regulated method of carry. And in fact, we're tracking in our maps at opencarry.org that 43 states allow open carry of handguns, at least on foot. Some states have some wrinkles to be aware of, and our maps help your listeners guide their way through that maze.
Tell me why you support this. I always thought that carrying a concealed weapon was a pretty good deterrent against a criminal who didn't know, for example, if you had a gun or not. If they see it sitting there on your belt, I don't know. Will they grab it? What do you think will happen?
Well, I think it depends on the situation. There are a lot of gun owners who like concealed carry, who like the element of surprise and think that in their life, in their travels, that's going to be good for them. There are others that think openly carrying a firearm in a properly holstered, of course, deters crime. In fact, recently there was a case where the Kennesaw, Georgia police confirmed that some open carriers in an IHOP actually scared off armed robbers who were then apprehended in the parking lot by accident by police.
Mike, what are some of the things that opencarry.org does to alert people to the possibility that, hey, you know what, you might be carrying weapons right there in the open?
That's right. Well, first, we have a series of maps at our website. Secondly, we have a forum, and a forum drills down to each state, and you can engage in discussions and ask questions, and other members will point you in the right direction or hook you up with small groups, which sometimes organize things like open carry picnics or litter pickups or other civic activities.
In some cases, I guess some folks have gone into, like, restaurants or coffee shops, and what's been the reaction from most of the people in there?
Well, I was just in two coffee shops and an ice cream shop today in Old Town Alexandria, and the reaction was either no reaction or it was curiosity, and people came up and said, hey, what's going on? Do I need a permit for that?
Interesting. They probably thought you were a detective undercover or something.
No, they didn't, I don't think undercover detectives carry their firearms in a holster on their belt openly, and that's really what we're talking about. We're doing the same thing that concealed carriers are doing. We're just taking our jacket off.
Mike, stay in touch with us on this, okay?
Okay, George.
That's Mike Stolenwerk, his website, opencarry.org. They are pushing states all around the country to give folks the right to carry weapons on the outside, not hidden. Men with whiter faces, by the way, are not only perceived as untrustworthy. Now look around at your friends. They may deserve the reputation, according to a new study published in the journal Psychological Science. In a computerized game, broad-faced men were more likely to exploit others for personal monetary gain, according to the lead researcher of the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. And other players expected this behavior. The study did not address female trustworthiness. A growing body of science is showing that facial configuration, placement of the eyes, the width of the cheekbones, and so on, provides clues to a person's personality, including the likelihood to be extroverted, conscientious, trustworthy. Now, while this analysis is not unfailing, it works slightly more often than not. A new Stanford University survey confirms what many iPhone users may have long suspected: Apple's smartphone can be addicting. The survey was administered to 200 students with iPhones, 70% of whom had owned their iPhones for less than a year. The most interesting trend was how quickly the iPhone became an indispensable part of the students' lifestyles and how many of them openly acknowledged they would be lost without it. I mean, have you ever seen people walk into a restaurant or anywhere with their phone? I mean, it's like attached to them. It's an appendage. They put it down on the table. They look at it all the time. People walk into a restaurant, talking and texting away. It really is. It's becoming addictive, isn't it? In Newark, New Jersey, I will say this, but I will try not to laugh. A black market butt enhancement practitioner is injecting New Jersey women with household materials and other hazardous materials, according to New Jersey health officials who have alerted the New York authorities to the present danger. Why would these women go to this guy? I don't know. Six Newark area women in the past 2 months have been hospitalized with severe infections caused by the injections of a variety of unknown materials, which would include petroleum jelly and hardware grade caulking around with that you put around your tub and stuff like that. He's injecting that into them. Our story at coasttocoastam.com in the news. Surgeons in China have operated to remove a 5-inch tail from a 4-month-old baby girl. Truly, it's a tail. The little girl called Hong Hong was born with the tail, but it has since doubled in size. Doctors finally operated to remove it. They believe it is successful. In a moment, we'll talk more about children. Heaven talks to children. Afterlife contacts. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me introduce you now this hour to Christine Dominiak, who is a grief recovery specialist, member of the Association for Death Education and Counseling, and the founder and spiritual advisor of Prayer Wave for After Death Communications. Christine has been an international spiritual bereavement recovery facilitator and has been featured all over the place. Here she is on Coast to Coast. Christine, how are you?
Well, hello, George. I'm fine. Thank you for having me. It's an honor to get to talk to you.
What is a certified grief recovery specialist?
It is someone who just does not address the emotional side of grief. There's a spiritual part of us that needs to be addressed also. So I combine what a certified grief recovery specialist, the principles that they use with the spiritual aspects, like helping people to recognize any signs that they're getting from their loved ones, because many times people are in a really dark place because they think they've lost their loved one forever. But then when you start going over the different common types of signs, there's about 20 different signs at least that people get. When you start going over that with them, they start realizing, oh, that happened to me. Oh, I received a very vivid dream from them. Oh, I felt somebody stroke my hair. When people start to realize that their loved ones are coming around and that they're still a part of their lives and that they can still see and hear them, it really turns the grieving process around to such joy for them because they realize they haven't lost that person to a dark hole or black hole somewhere. And that means so much to everyone who loves the person who's passed on.
Christine, you've devoted some time in Heaven Talks to Children about children and their afterlife contacts and messages.
Right.
Did something happen? Did you witness something in order to write this?
Well, I am not a psychic or a medium, but picture this.
Okay.
You're lying in bed and your in-laws visit you one night. And then you realize they've been dead for a number of years. What are they doing here? So this life-altering event, which happened to me in 1998, got me on a spiritual path that I never expected to be on because I really wasn't interested in after-death communications. But this got me on this path, and I started to notice that those who received afterlife signs were doing so much better than people who weren't getting the signs and were desperate to get one. So I, that's when I formed my Prayer Wave for After Death Communication group. So we would pray for people to get those signs, I really believed in the power of group prayer to God, and that was really paying off. People were getting signs from the prayers, and it led me to write a book about the 20 common signs that people get. And while I was collecting the stories, I started to notice that children were like little mediums. They were different than adults. Like adults would get more subtle signs. at like coins being left for them or music or hearing.
Perfume.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
The smell of perfume of their loved ones.
Yes, exactly. But children were actually seeing and hearing and talking to the spirits, whereas adults did not have that capability usually. But it was a very common phenomenon for the stories that were coming through. So it was so fascinating to me because in many cases, the children did not even know that relative because the relative had died before the child was born. So there was no way for them to know the name because the name was never even brought up in the family, for instance. Or even if the child knew the person who had passed, they may be too young to understand what dying means or passing on means. And they would still insist that they were in the room. And why aren't you talking to them? Or why aren't you letting them in the door? And they would get really upset that the parent was not paying attention to that grandmother, for instance. So when we start to realize that there is such the child's world, the natural world and the supernatural world blends together, we can really take a lot of comfort from the fact of knowing that there is an afterlife and that our loved ones still come and visit us.
You have a quote on the back of your book cover here, which is chilling in a good way. I'm going to read it. Grandma, sometimes Papa isn't in heaven. Sometimes he's here.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Can you imagine it if you weren't into this and your child says that to you? Whoa.
I've heard stories where little children who never met their grandparents, who have passed on, describe to their mother or father, hey, I just saw Papa, you know, because they'd hear them talk about him once in a while. You know, I just saw him, and they would describe what he looks like, and they perhaps never even had seen a picture of him.
Right, exactly. I have stories like that in my book. It's truly amazing. And some of the children talk about, They'll point to a picture of a grandparent, for instance, and they'll say, oh, I know, I met him. We used to play together before I was born. And there was a period of time where that grandfather, for instance, had passed over and the child was not born yet. And so the child could describe what the grandparent was wearing, and the child would describe the favorite shirt or color that the grandparent was known for wearing, but yet the child had not seen any photographs of that grandparent wearing that particular shirt or dress or whatever. So, which is a very validating experience too, to realize that they were both in heaven at the same time. And the child would talk about, well, I was waiting to be born.
When the child sleeps and dreams and they see the dearly departed one in the dream state, are they afraid, or do they feel pretty good about it?
Any child that is not being frightened by what they're seeing gets a lot of comfort out of it. But when you're in your dream state, you are open to all types of spirits visiting. So children can have scary dreams, but it's not because it's the comforting relative or loved one that's visiting them. It's just someone from the dark side. And children have a lot of problems like this because they can see things in their rooms that adults cannot see. So one of the things that I talk about in my book is how to protect a child from that happening, how to empower a child from scary spirits.
Are you convinced that there are good and bad spirits?
I'm convinced that there are good spirits and that there are demons. That's how I look at the bad spirits. Right. I'm a Catholic, and I very much believe that that Satan and demons exist. And I know in some circles that's not popular, but in my world, that's what I have seen exist, and I very much believe that. So if a child asks for God's protection, the child will notice a significant change in the room if something scary is happening, and they may even see their angels come in and chase out whatever is scaring them. So it's very powerful to teach a child how to just call on God for help if they're ever afraid.
Can a parent help a child, though, who gets scared to death, practically?
Oh, sure. They can, if a child is frightened to go to bed at night, if they take a comforting article with them to bed or a religious article, if they feel, you know, if the child's old enough to understand that. But the parent just needs to teach the child that if they see something scary, just to yell out, God help me, or Jesus help me, or by whatever name the child and you call your creator.
Fascinating. Christine, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls with you when we come back in just a moment. Perhaps also you may want to share a story of a child who saw a dearly departed one. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour we're going to Alberta, Canada. Jim Maroney joins us with an incredible story of disclosure in his investigation. So we'll be doing that next hour. When we come back, Christine Dominiak will take your phone calls as we talk about Heaven Talks to Children right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Christine Dominiak. Christine, why do you think children tend to have a better ability to communicate with spirits than adults?
I believe it's because they're so innocent and pure. And I think that really makes a difference than we adults who have baggage that we carry around. But also, it wasn't that long ago that children were actually in heaven. So they still have that part of them that
connection.
Somewhere in the memory bank, yes, and that connection, definitely.
How about age for children? Are 3-4-year-olds more apt to do this than...
Definitely. The majority of the stories in my book are children that had the most stories, the most experiences, were up to about the age of 4. And then not as many from 5 to 9, and then it fell off quite a bit up to the age of 17. And I think part of that is the social aspect of it. I mean, little children, they don't understand that they're seeing spirits, and there's no ridicule from their peers or made to feel odd. But as a child gets older, they start to realize that this isn't the normal thing that everyone else is seeing, and they start to turn off to the gift because they don't want to be different from other people.
Well, I was going to say, while it's happening, though, Christine, are they particularly gifted? Are they good in school, for example?
I really don't know. I've never taken a survey about that, so that's an interesting question. That is something to, it could even be a distraction.
you're doing a test, right? And all of a sudden that voice says, no, change the answer to this.
Wouldn't we all love one of those with us?
I wish I did. Let's go to Marvin, truck driving in Iowa. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Marvin, go ahead.
Hey, good evening.
Hi.
First of all, my mother-in-law passed away in 1997 of cancer at the age of 58. Okay. Mm-hmm. My granddaughter, Kyla, who 5 years ago at the age of about 3 was helping my wife dust around the house. My wife grabbed a picture, an 11x16 portrait of her mother, which is Kyla's great grandmother, when she was about 30 something years old. And my granddaughter looks at my wife and says, I know that lady. And she'd never really noticed the picture because it sits up on an antique sewing machine. She said, I know that lady. And my wife looked at her and says, how can you know her? My granddaughter looked at my wife and says, she comes to visit me at night, and she tells me I need to clean my room. Now, this is the room that my mother-in-law used to live in until she passed away.
Oh, that is fabulous. That is fabulous. And how did your wife feel about that?
She was flabbergasted. She just couldn't really deal with it at first, but then she thought, you know, that is really cool that she knows her mother was looking out for our granddaughter.
Isn't that wonderful? She's like a little angel on her shoulder.
It's got some magic to that one, Christine, doesn't it?
Right. That's the kind of stories that I hear all the time. It's just so heartwarming to know that they watch over the children.
You could write another book just getting these stories that you're going to hear tonight.
I know.
Go to Chicago, Illinois, east of the Rockies. Tom, you're up.
Hey, George, how's it going?
Good, Tommy.
This is a little degree of separation, but it's in the vein. I lost my dad a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom.
Well, thank you. And a couple of days ago, my dog sat there for 2 to 3 minutes barking at nothing, though focused intently on something here in this room.
Oh, animals, pets see spirits, Tom.
They that was my impression. No matter what I did, I would herd her away. And no matter what, she would focus right on the same spot. And for 2 to 3 minutes, I could not get her to stop.
And you knew it was your dog was looking at your dad or something.
Yeah, I did.
Your dad. Right. And you know why you also knew that? When they visit us, they also at the same time will put the thought in our minds that it is them, that they are there with us. So it's a simultaneous thought that you will get when they're around. So
Absolutely. Most
definitely was your dad. Mm-hmm. That's
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Great story.
I'm so glad that brought you comfort.
Thanks, Tom. Why are animals more sensitive? Maybe because they're so innocent like children.
That could be.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we go to Betsy in Battle Creek, Michigan. Betsy, you are on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hi, Betsy.
Hi. When my brother passed away and left a widow and 3 young children, they were 8, 6, and 5, and a couple of days after he was gone, the 8-year-old came downstairs, and he seemed to be not as upset as the others. He seemed to be more at peace with everything.
Right.
And he said that his dad had come and sat on the edge of his bed the night before and talked to him and told him that everything was okay and that everything would be okay. And he was the one of the 3 children who handled the whole thing. I mean, he was older, but he handled it better and did better, you know, than the other 2.
That's right. It makes such a difference in the children's lives.
And he's very bright.
Yeah, that's wonderful. He may visit the other ones in their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm sure he's going to come around to them too, but it may be that the 8-year-old is really particularly gifted. So it was easier for him to come to the 8-year-old than the other 2. But mm-hmm. he definitely will be around the other ones, letting them know that he's with them too. And that'll be a big help to all of them. How did that help the family? It did.
Mm-hmm. It did. Everybody was comforted by that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, there's nothing like getting...
And nobody talked him out of it. You know, nobody...
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Tried to talk him out of it.
Right.
Well, and the other thing is that I had an experience too shortly after that. My brother used to sing a lot of classical themes, and he loved the music from The Barber of Seville, and he used to whistle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of half asleep one night and watching the fire in the fireplace, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard this whistling of The Barber of Seville.
Oh, that's so cool!
And that was so my friend and I, whose brother had also passed away, we talked about our cosmic brothers, and we used to talk about these messages that we would get from them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That only happened once, but it was very comforting.
That's all it has to, just
that's
once.
That's right. That's all you need.
Tell me about the prayer wave. How does it work, Christine?
Well, we have I have a message board and a website, and every Friday is Prayer Wave Friday, and the group, no matter what country you are in, we have 500 members from 21 countries that are part of the group, and Friday doesn't matter what time of the day. But
how strange. That's what we do here. I'll tell you about that when
really?
You finish it. It's amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
And we pray for everyone else in our group and anyone else who comes to the message board who asks for us to pray for them to get a sign from their loved ones. And that's how it works. And also, my message board is a safe haven for people to come and share their experiences, where many times there's no one that you can share a spiritual experience with. People just don't get it, or they think you're hallucinating. So they can come in a very safe place and share their experience, and we celebrate their experiences. That's what we're all about.
When I hear the word prayer, I think of consciousness and mass consciousness, and not religion, but more spirituality. A couple mm-hmm. of years ago, somebody sent me an email and said, George, would you please have the Coast audience concentrate on, this person with a tumor? And so I'd mentioned it and said, let's do this on a Friday at not any specific time, and let's see what happens, because we have been experimenting with the power of the mind. We've been experimenting with weather conditions, making it rain here, doing this there, with some pretty good success.
Mm.
So we said, what the heck, let's do it.
Right.
And I get an email back about a week or so later from the individual who said the person went in to get his tumor checked. It was gone.
Oh, my Goodness.
And, you know, again, we don't take credit for that, but it's weird. So every Friday, we just throw it out there that people on their own time say a little prayer, a little consciousness for, mm-hmm. for others. And we're getting some incredible results. Now, what people do is they'll send me an email with the person's name and the affliction. I don't publish it. We don't put it up on the website for privacy reasons.
Sure.
And I just keep them. And these miraculous, or should I say strange things are happening.
Well, I think they're miracles.
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful. You're doing a really
But you're doing the same thing.
I know. We're brother and sister, yeah. George. That is wonderful. But I, you know, for in my case, I get the instant feedback, which is really nice.
Yes.
That someone, and I can see that their healing is beginning and the joy that takes place in their heart when they get a sign. So there's just nothing like group prayer. And I, to God, that's the way I look at it. I really feel we touch God's heart when we get together as a group and pray for someone else, because it's a very unselfish thing to do. It's not about yourself.
That's true. Let's go to Springfield, Missouri on our Skype line. Jim, you're up with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Hi, Christine. Hi,
Hi,
George.
Hi, Jim.
Hey.
Hey, I got a cute little story. My son was about 18 months old, and it's kind of similar to the other guy's story. He was walking past the table and saw a picture of his grandfather. And his grandfather had been dead since 1932. My son's 30 now. And he looks over at the picture, and he points at the picture, and he says, "Pink." And my ex-wife looked at my son and looks at me, and he said, "Pink? What? That's not pink, David. That's silver." He goes, "No, pink." And I said, "Pink was my grandfather's nickname."
Oh, my goodness gracious.
That's a good one.
And he had never heard the nickname before.
Great.
That's chilling. I like that.
That is wonderful.
It was 100% crazy. It was so cool. I told my mom, and she just lit up. And, of course, David was always her special grandson, since that was her dad.
Yeah. He was the contact.
Yeah. Oh, that is so wonderful.
Great.
I love that story. You'll love my book when it comes out, Heaven Talks to Children.
Hey, when does it come out?
It comes out the last week of July, but you can pre-order it from Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or Borders. So actually, people could order it now.
I'm lucky I have the cover.
Yes, you do. And you'll get the real thing when it's out, too.
Nothing
I'll send you one.
Nothing on the inside, just the cover. Let's go to Hattiesburg, Mississippi, first-time caller. George, you're up with us. Go ahead, George.
How you doing, Ms. George? I love your show. Ms. Christine, how are you doing this evening?
Fine, George. Nice to meet you.
I have a couple questions. No doubt in my mind that these children and these dogs and all these people that you've talked to have seen spirits, and they've talked to them, but I have one question. Well, maybe two questions. One question is that, this is going to be a comment from you, I suppose. The book, the good book, the Lord's book, said that the dead know nothing and they sleep and they wait, and that spiritual incarnations are that of the evil one, which would be Satan. I believe firmly that heaven, God doesn't send people down to talk. These aren't really their relatives or whatnot. Satan does kind of crazy things to make people think that everything's okay and whatnot. How do you feel about that?
Well, that is really interesting, George, because I actually have a chapter in my book, Heaven Talks to Children, that deals specifically with that concern that people have. So it would take a really long time now to explain that to you, but I think it's worth for you to look at it, because it gives you other passages in the New Testament of the Bible that says something a little different, and experiences that Jesus and his apostles had were different than what you just mentioned. For instance, I'll just give you a quick one. Moses and Elijah talked to Jesus on Mount Tabor, and they had been dead for years. So how is it that Jesus didn't say he was talking to Satan. He said he was talking to Moses and Elijah. That's a little something to keep in the back of your mind. And I hope you get my book and read that chapter. The chapter says, does the Bible permit spirit communication? Because it may just give you a new information to look at this topic.
Christine, how do the demons get to children? How does that happen?
Well, normally angels, children have a lot of protection from their angels. But the angels are a higher vibration, and they are on the higher spiritual realms. And the demons are on a lower realm, closer to the earth. Therefore, sometimes, even though you have angelic protection, they can fly under the radar of the angels. And but as soon as the angels notice that, they will intervene, especially for the children. But you just may have like a few seconds there where it's a very scary experience for the child. So that's why it's always good. You're alerting your angels. You're alerting God when you say, God, help me, or Jesus, help me. And it just gets everyone's attention very quickly.
Let's go to Philadelphia. Skip, take it away.
Skip.
Hi. Hi, George. I love the show.
Thanks,
and Christine.
Skip.
Glad to
Hi,
talk
Skip.
To you. Hi. I have some photographs with orbs in the photos, which is believed to be energy in the form of spirits from the other side.
Right.
And
right.
The one, and I read this in Christina's book. Her first book explains this. And the one orb has actually my name spelled out in it quite clearly.
Really, Skip?
Yeah.
That's
and
amazing.
I have another one that my daughter passed 8 years ago from suicide.
Right.
And has my daughter's face in there along with our cat and our dog next to her.
Wow. That is unbelievably wonderful.
So that really hiked up my belief quite a bit.
Absolutely.
Right, right.
Because I can't figure any other way that it could happen except for it's real.
That's right. That's right. Someone else sent me, well, I believe it was a friend of yours. Skip emails me, and a friend of yours sent me some orbs, photographs with orbs where her husband's face was in a number of these orbs. It was incredible. I mean, I could see them on my computer.
Now, how do you explain all this, Christine? How do you explain the communication? How do you explain what's on the other side? How do you explain the fact that they want to be noticed? What the heck is going on?
Okay. I think all these things that we're talking about are gifts from God. So when spirits can do these things, they learn how to communicate when they get over on the other side in heaven. And God sends them to us, and they're to bring us the comfort by these signs. So they learn how to do these things. I really, you know, it's energy. I really can't tell you the technological nuts and bolts of it. I guess if, you know, once we get there, we can find out how it works. But I just take it as a gift from God, and I'm just happy that it happens.
Well, you might be able to squeeze you, David, in for me. Houston, go ahead, Dave.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, David.
I was just curious, earlier you were talking about how the children were recently in heaven, as recent God hears their prayer.
Right.
And I was just curious where you got that information at.
Oh, why? Oh, you know, it's funny, David. I grew up thinking that we were first created on the earth. And reading about people who had near-death experiences, I've come to learn that God actually created us as spirits in heaven before we came down to earth in a human body. And that we actually made spiritual agreements with God in heaven about what our lessons are going to be that we wanted to learn. And a lot of us actually signed up for how we were going to pass over, because this was our mission, and these were the lessons that we wanted to learn to help us in our soul group growth to get closer to God and to be stronger spirits.
I haven't signed up for that trip yet.
I'm
not going to, not for a while.
I wish you all happiness and goodness and light, George.
Hey, Christine, we are rapidly coming out of time here. Give me your website.
It's ChristineDumaniac.com. So it's the spelling of my name together, ChristineDumaniac.
All right, great. And we've got that link at coasttocoastam.com. Thank you so much. Good luck. Heaven Talks to Children, Afterlife Contacts. In a moment, Jim Maroney joins us. We're going to talk about disclosure. We're going way up into Alberta, Canada. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.